Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining our session. Today we have three speakers, and the speakers will take us through a micro lens of what our profession and how it contributes to the wider economy, and also just how many actuarial jobs is going to be there. With that question in mind, I'm Dorothy Cheng, and I'm your chair for this session. We have assembled three awesome speakers. Firstly, let me introduce Richard Yee. Richard has led general insurance consulting practice across Asian Pacific, from boutique firms to Big Four now, and now at Oliver Wyman. He's passionate about working with high-performing teams and listening to a client to uncover creative solution to complex problems. Next, we have Joseph Huang Lu. Joseph describes himself as a midlife actuary who sees the world through numbers and then brings it to life through language. He's known for his insightful and often poetic reflections on the profession and its evolving role in the society. And then finally, we have Stephen Choi. Stephen is someone who believes in freeing actuaries from doing repetitive tasks, to focus on something meaningful. Isn't that wonderful? He's spent his career developing industrialized solutions, working alongside actuaries to enable smarter, faster, and more value-driven outcomes. So now please sit back, absorb, and be inspired. We will have some Q&A at the end of the session. Now, without further ado, please join me in welcoming the first speaker, Richard.
Thanks, Dorothy. The Actuaries Institute acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands and waters we live and work, travel and trade in. We pay our respects to the members of those communities, elders past and present, and recognise and celebrate their continuing custodianship and culture. Good afternoon. I stand here as a proud general insurance actuary, a practitioner of curiosity who looks for blue oceans, and a guide for aspiring young actuaries. In Australia, we have a strong legacy over the last 100 years. From humble slide rules, pen and paper, to now more big data centres, machine learning and AI bots. Today, what are the future job prospects for actuaries? Will the growth be as successful for the profession as in the past? How will technology shape the future of the number of employed actuaries? Before we go into the future, let's reminisce about the past. My first job was at NRMA Insurance. As a general insurance actuary, I was in the minority. My Macquarie University grads mainly went to life insurance and superannuation. In addition, Macquarie University was the only actuarial uni in Australia. And this was essentially run by a family, the Pollard family, for those that know. To illustrate how times have changed during my career, at my first job at NRMA Insurance, I would submit programs overnight to the mainframe to allow computational time. It'd be pretty disappointing going to work the next day to see a runtime error and the bug was there. And you had to start again and wait another night. We used to use fax machines. I don't know if everyone in the room knows what a fax machine is. There were no mobiles. We were really excited at some stage to get a colour screen. And then we happily went home every night, not thinking about work. Clearly, technology over time has significantly impacted how we work, but more importantly, right now, technology is going to impact us significantly and it's imminent. In the graph, you see there's over 120 years of our profession's Australia-based membership in the graph. The actuaries represent maybe 1% of all the accountants. We're at in the thousands, accountants in the hundreds of thousands. something in our graph, you can see the sharp rise there, but something incredible happened in 1996. That's the year I qualified. Well, it was meant to be incredible. Sadly, no one really noticed. I think there's a lot of other factors in the 1990s that we see a shift in the growth trajectory, and we'll address this a bit later on. Why does this matter? Our current operating environment is facing paradigm shifts. Shifts at the same time as our rapid membership growth. Many actuaries will know the potential issues of a changing business mix, which masks the underlying deteriorating trends. So what does this mean for actuaries? The projected number of actuaries at the current growth rate, and that will enter the workforce, it looks like there'll be a gap. Clearly, more supply than the demand that is based on the current financial service sector. This is entirely exacerbated by the job killer, AI. Our growth has varied across sectors. Historically, you were born in life insurance and superannuation, known as pensions to baby boomers. General insurance came to life in the 70s, and eventually the youngest siblings of banking, reinsurance, health insurance were born, but their growth plateaued. It was really a case of general insurance taking all the superannuation's dinner. When I first joined the workforce, general insurance was a wild frontier, full of promise, new complex problems, and a chance to think about something other than death and retirement. There was a lot of pioneering work done by general insurance actuaries at the time. Such things as listed below briefly include stochastic modelling and thinking in a dynamic framework, tackling the difficult problem of modelling natural hazards such as cyclones, bushfires, wind and hail. We use reserving based on statistical distributions, now more recently climate modelling. But this is the key. Our family never took a meaningful step outside of financial services. Financial services represent less than 8% of gross domestic product. A small number of actuaries have broken the mould, stepped outside financial services, but those are few or far between. This is a major issue for our profession, and it also presents an opportunity. This slide shows the average revenue served per actuary over the past decade. It's been very stable, and a slight kick up at the end there. More recently, so what's driving that little kick up? Is it a hardening general insurance market, more work, more demand, more value from actuaries as risk environments shift? But here's the bigger message. Our contribution grows not only when the markets harden, but when we step into broader roles. When we do more, roles where not just measuring risk, but advising leaders, shaping systems, and guiding society through uncertainty. The world is full of complexity, from pandemics to climate change, from economic shocks to digital disruption to new inventions like digital assets. These are actuarial problems in disguise. But the world doesn't know that. That's our opportunity, not just to grow in number, but to grow in purpose across many sectors of the economy. I'd like to welcome Joseph.
Thank you, Rich. That was an incredible history that he walked us through. And Rich lived through a decent chunk of that too. It's important to remember our history. In fact, just the other week, Rich told me in high school he learnt about horse and carriage. We don't have to learn about that anymore. And there's a lesson to be learnt there, that sometimes we learn about things that aren't useful. So Rich qualified 18 years before me. I'm no spring chicken either. You could say, and I call myself a midlife actuary. In my time, applying a macro to a spreadsheet was our version of installing a turbo on a Toyota Corolla. Making numbers dance on a spreadsheet, that was our version of art. Statistically, I'm just short of half-life. I probably have about 25 years left of my career. So I'm curious about what's ahead for me and for all of us actuaries. So with that in mind, I want us to take a sneak peek at 2050 with a bit of what-if scenario analysis. And I want each of us to consider while considering this analysis, where will we go? If the growth we're seeing today continues, then we're on track to a more than 50% growth in our Australian-based membership by 2050. That means an additional 2,600 actuaries entering our membership, which means 2,600 new actuarial roles in the next 25 years. Now, growth is great. In fact, we need to 100-fold while keeping the accountant numbers stagnant in order to catch up with them. But it also raises a critical question. Where will we go? In the previous slide, we looked at the supply of actuarial skills, which is primarily driven by university and actuaries institute education programs. The demand for actuarial skills will actually face a lot of challenge in the next 25 years. In a very plausible scenario, let's imagine a future where 60% of the workload of a junior actuary is automated. For a senior actuary, let's imagine that to be only 5%. Now, combine this with the projected growth in membership, and here's what we get. A gap of up to 3,000 actuaries by 2050 between supply and demand for actuarial services. That's 3,000 actuaries that we need to solve a macroeconomic resourcing problem for. This is a phenomenal problem if you're an actuarial recruiting company, but it's a personal challenge for actuaries individually, and it's a professional challenge for the institute. Here's a particularly insightful point. The ratio of actuarial headcount to revenue is highest for life insurance and general insurance by far compared to any other sector. In these sectors, actuaries are relied on extensively for their expertise, their techniques, and their skills. However, it's these sectors that will face the impact of AI most quickly and harshly. I am one of these general insurance actuaries. So in this what-if scenario, where do actuaries go when their cores can no longer absorb them? Where do we go from here? Do we let our supply shrink? Watch our members give in to the gravitational pull of opening a cafe? Watch our members dance for TikTok? Shall we all buy hoodies and call ourselves data scientists? Or do we create demand for actuarial services? In this slide, we've tested two scenarios measured by our revenue served per actuary. In one scenario, we do nothing, creating the lower line on the graph. Our members will automate themselves out of tasks until they are cost-benefited out of jobs. Our profession on a whole will continue to increase its revenue served per actuary as the economy grows, naturally, but we don't reach our potential. And more importantly, we may lose members along the way. It's very unlikely that 3,000 actuaries can be absorbed by the professional services sector. So can we create meaningful roles in non-financial services, in mining, construction, agriculture, transport? Do these sectors have complex problems to solve? Can these sectors benefit from rigorous mathematics? Are we all thinking Poisson distribution when we think about seismic activity in a mining operation? It's okay if you think log normal. I think Poisson. Are there other problems to solve in other sectors? Do you think vine mortality rates when you think about 100-year-old vines in the Barossa Valley? Yes, we need jobs to survive. But creating the demand for our skills will let us thrive. We can even create more contribution to the economy because we are working in more of the economy. The potential difference in our contribution is an additional 33% additional revenue surged per actuary on average compared to doing nothing at all. Generally, business owners will refer to their accountant and their lawyer when making critical business decisions. We need that to change. We need them to refer to their actuary. The difference in these two futures is intentionality. It's leadership from the Institute, from our elders, from each of us. It's whether we choose to shape our destiny or let it happen to us. Our success is definitely not a given. It will take considered effort from each of us. Without action, our junior members will drown in the sea of AI. So I want each of us to consider very carefully, where will you go from here?
Thank you, Joe. My slide is a little bit grim. Just a little. Especially when we're talking about AI. So before I might use this slide. Is this the end of actuaries? And AI was supposed to be a pun. So, thank you, Joe. My name is Stephen Choi, and today I'll be talking about what AI means for actuaries. Will we be replaced with AI, by AI, and eventually, does this mark an end to our profession? Or will we take advantage of it and reshape the industry? Recall from the previous slides that there is a potential decline of the demand for actuaries in the insurance sector due to AI. However, there are two considerations that I want everyone here to think about. I mean, do we often achieve transformation at the speed at which we want to? The answer is no. Secondly, do we always stay the same as what we typically do in our day-to-day life? No. So, you know, assuming if the transformation velocity and what we do remains the same, then yes, I do agree. The screen of black, this horrible screen, remains true that there will be roles lost in the actuarial, in this industry, substitutable with AI. Now, but unfortunately, we don't stay that way. We don't do the same thing all the time. We evolve with technology. And also recall from the previous slide, I'm sure there are five or six slides that you probably have seen for the past 20 minutes. Recall the previous slide that there has been an increase in the demand for actuaries for the past 20 to 30 years. Truth be told, AI was already introduced that time. For example, we will use machine learning algorithm to do our pricing models, our reserving, our capital, as well as automating the monthly reporting that we produce. And as Joe mentioned, introducing VBA in an Excel workbook was very, very, I'll keep it PG rated, was very fun for us as actuaries. But the real shift is not the typical AI that we are currently using, it's generative AI. The ability to create contents faster than anything we have seen in the past 20 or 30 odd years is the acceleration of multi-task steps from creating an end-to-end value chain of claims management process to getting Anthropic Claude to create a first cut of your Python code for pricing purposes. Then I guess you would wonder, what does that mean for our jobs? Is our job at risk? Are we going to be ultimately taken over by AI? I don't think so. It doesn't signal an end to our profession. It marks a turning point, a chance for us to evolve again, like we always do for the past 20 or 30 odd years. The way we work with AI will be no different to how we worked previously. In the past, we would have an organization chart with 5 to 10 graduates working for us, churning out the reports, churning out the models. But with generative AI, things are changing. Rather than hiring 5 to 10 graduates, you probably want to hire a little bit less than that, maybe below 5. So what does that mean for the current and the future actuaries? Well, for the new joiners, it's going to be tough. It will be very competitive because organization will not require double-digit or even triple-digit junior members. But as the paradigm shifts, it creates new opportunities. It creates opportunities, especially at the intersection of actuarial science, AI development, data ethics, and AI governance. What about the experienced actuaries like us? What does that mean? What's the challenge? Well, if we don't continue to evolve our skill set and complement our experience, our traditional actuarial skills with AI, the struggle is real. We will be replaced. Now, the reality is pretty ugly, but what does that mean for the future actuaries? Would that deter people from joining the Institute? I personally don't think so. Because first and foremost, there will always be a need for appointed actuaries in the industry. That's our baseline. Secondly, Gen AI is expanding the risk landscape from data privacy to algorithmic bias to even ethical use of AI. And in a rapidly evolving AI world, membership in the Institute remains a trusted credential. When technology is moving faster than regulation, the public needs professionals that can interpret complex models responsibly, communicate uncertainty clearly, and uphold ethical standards. Membership doesn't just provide technical training. It builds credibility in an AI-driven world. Rather than limiting opportunities, AI opens up new pathways for actuaries to make a meaningful impact. To conclude, AI will redefine, not reduce, interest in the actuarial profession. It will change how we work and the tools that we use. Ultimately, it will enhance the profession's relevance, value, and appeal. But it is also up to the Institute and every one of us here to evolve with these changes, ensuring that the profession stays attractive for the next generations ahead. I mean, or we could be reactive and just let AI take over the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen, Joseph, and Richard. I think we can facilitate a closer conversation if anyone has any questions. There is a stand-up mic in the middle of the room. For the benefits of our virtual audience, please go to the microphone to ask your questions. And there's also a website if you wanted to send your questions online. I might just start with my question. So I think we have spoken about, I mean, it's definitely a wonderful idea to see that actuarial can spend into other industries. But I mean, why in the past or currently our actuaries concentrated on the superannuation, life insurance generation? Why is that the case?
I mean, so when we think about crises that occur in the economy and the dependence on superannuation or annuities or life insurance, they've been quite critical catastrophic outcomes if you get it wrong. And so there's been a lot of advocacy and regulation in place to protect people and the economy. And we need someone that we can trust, and that profession that we have trusted in the past until now has been the actuarial profession. So we've been put in a place of responsibility and trust. However, that responsibility and trust has been confined in very niche financial services sector, which we all continued concentrating in and playing in. And it worked for us in that there was no competition, but it worked against us in that we were so concentrated in 8% of the economy.
Yeah, I can just add to that. So the legislation is a big kind of like a monopoly on some of the work we do. It's mandated, right? So we don't have that mandate for the other sectors. So that's the challenge. It's a harder competition in those other sectors. You're competing against data scientists, software engineers. So that's a bigger space that we could go into to grow areas for the profession in the other sectors, but you have the challenge that you're just like everyone else. Yeah, you sort of line up against everyone else. So that's going to be the challenge, to find that niche or find that somewhere where we have an edge that gets us the advantage in those spaces.
So I have to tell you, I think Rich is done. So your question about...
Thanks for that comment.
Sorry, Jenny, do you mind if I ask you a question? Not to put you on the spot, but do you actually, have you ever thought like maybe actuarial recruiters have a place in trying to sell our skills into other industries at all?
So the accountants, you think of them, they have a wide range of salaries in there, and I think, they'll expand into all the – so they've grown and they succeeded in growing. They didn't think about salaries potentially as – like I think actuaries think they come into the profession thinking it's, highly paid, prestigious and all that. So that perception, if we were to go into other industries, it would be a different kind of selling point potentially, right? There's also the possibility that, the bigger supply is going to reduce the salary. So that's just a natural economic thing. And I think that's...
And I think that has happened.
Yep.
Yeah. Adrian, yes, this might be a question. Just so potentially a different way to think about this problem is, if you consider the actuary as a product, the way other industries might consider creating a market for a product would not be to push that to the customer, but rather to go and ask industry what skills it's looking for and filter that back right through the education program, through universities, and deliver those skills. So the solution may not be that we have to find new markets, but actually that we need new types of actuaries to be coming through the education program. If anyone wants to comment on that, they can turn it into a question.
I definitely agree with that. I did throw the onus back on to not only the institute, the education programs, in order to, make us competitive against other technical professions in other areas. So, we would go up against the accountants, go up against the engineers, data scientists. What separates us apart from all these other sectors? All these other professions, for me, there's only one key criteria. It's that we are backed by a professional body that upholds a level of trust throughout the community. And that level of trust means that we all uphold that level of quality when delivering advice and analysis. So really, we can do anything as long as it's backed by our profession and trusted and reviewed and rigorously checked.
Especially in the current day, in the current ages of the society, where it's no longer the traditional mathematics, it's about debunking the outputs of a generative AI. Although we say, yeah, we can get an AI to write a program for us to then build a model, AI surely can't validate or test the accuracy or even the usefulness or even come up with the use cases of those particular models. And the world needs, the public needs actuaries with credentials, with the public needs trusted professions that can interpret the outputs of these AI. And so perhaps this could be a chance for us to include as part of the curriculum and start upskilling the new generation with this.
Hi, it's Nick Hill here from Making Advice and Actuarial. Look, to be honest, actuaries have probably been seen as AI for decades. We're the same thing. We're a black box. Nobody quite understands what we're doing. But our skill set has always been, I don't think it's just a professional body, which actually helps this, but it's probably three things. One, business acumen. We understand business acumen. And that should be emphasized. All three things I mentioned should be emphasized. Business acumen, managing different stakeholders. You know, you've got trustee, then you've got the sponsor, and then the regulator. We're managing all of those. And thirdly, and probably is very well covered in the profession, is communication. So, you know, an AI comes and spreadsheets come and models come and go. We've stood the test of time. You know, if you go to the Actuaries Institute in the UK, it's in sort of 14th century buildings and stuff. So we've been around since Friendly Societies, Mutuals around. So we've been around. AI will be there. People will not understand AI, but it is our job, whatever the technology of the flavor of the year, to communicate and explain that and use our skills to move into disciplines that we've not necessarily been in. The examples, you know, I think the question was, why are we in superannuation and insurance? That's because we were required to be, and that's where our profession came from. But there's actuaries in banking, and we get work. We go work from a monastery to, you know, explain the lifetime income needs of a monk. We get membership clubs that require, you know, review of the membership fees. It's all financial projection and making it meaningful insight. So I think that's probably the takeaway. And I thought I'd just share that with everyone. Thank you. So any responses to that would be welcome as well.
Sorry. Thank you. I knew I could have a lot to say about this. So one of the things, firstly, I agree with you about the trust in the profession. I feel that that is a strength, and it's something that people can always come back to. So you could go off and work in other areas and then come out. You've still got something core that you can hold on to. And I think that is a good selling point. I think the new education system is now set up that we can offer courses in other areas. And that does two things. It trains the students in different areas, but it also helps us promote outside our traditional areas so that people start to think of actuaries as working in all these other areas. Most people don't think about actuaries most of the time. But if you know, you're looking for a job, then you can point, if you can point back to the Institute as, well, this is the whole breadth of what we cover, then that's true. I do think the best way for us to go and work in other areas is for people to apply for jobs outside of financial services. But,
Sorry.
I wanted to ask you about your graph, how much per actuary. Because when I was in recruitment, that was one of the things I always wanted to be able to say to a client was, if you employ an actuary and take on three actuaries, you're going to save so much money and be able to give them a monetary thing. So I'll be interested to hear your comments on how you work that out.
Yeah. Very high level, probably more simple than you're giving credit for. But essentially, we broke down the general insurance, life insurance, superannuation, deposit-taking institutions, health insurance. Looked at all of their top-line income streams and just did a ratio against that for all the actuaries that work in those sectors. Now, when you add in non-financial services, you bring in an entire different revenue stream. And it won't make sense to, let's say you have a actuary that works in the space sector. You don't account for the entire space sector revenue and divide it by one actuary. So you have to normalize it. But even normalizing a very small fraction, even if it's a 1% fraction of a standard large company in a different sector, contributes more to our revenue surge per actuary than actuaries going into financial services.
There just must be something in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's a great way to kind of present the value that actuaries bring, especially since, unlike accountants, actuaries don't work in all these other sectors. So one takeaway I want us to all think about when we think about disruption is accountants already work in every sector. And accountants will actually be impacted just as much by AI as actuaries. But accountants don't have anywhere to go. So they're probably in a worse position than us. We have other sectors to go to.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Vanessa from Pacific Life Free. So you guys kind of talked about how AI is going to replace jobs, and especially the lower level ones, right? One of my bigger concerns is that, so the lower level grunt work essentially is almost what is needed for you to become a really good actuary and to move away from those more manual grunt work, right? In a future where we don't have as much of these grunt work, I feel like a big concern is that the actuaries won't be as good because they're not the ones building the model anymore. I would just like to hear comments or thoughts on that.
We're seeing different insurance companies have that issue already. So they've got teams of staff who perform the valuation work, and what's already in place is an automated reserving system. So they come in and they getting input and outputs, and then they've got to explain it, and they have a lot of difficulty doing that. So, you know, the clients are sort of saying, well, how do we train our younger staff to get that knowledge? And it's almost like going back to, like you say, go back to doing it yourself, or, you know, pen and paper, or doing the basics and the fundamentals, because a lot of they're missing a lot of those steps. So there is gaps. It does create gaps in the skill sets of the staff, and you know, it's going to be a challenge to get them to learn those. They can be done, but you have to be consciously teaching them. Otherwise, that gets lost.
So, in addition to the industry that we're typically dealing with, I can shed some light on the banking sector, especially when regulators, for regulatory capital models, regulators would expect the organization to develop and explain the model itself, have a comprehensive model development document along with a model validation associating with the models that you're using to calculate this regulatory capital. So yes, we can use AI to then develop the first cut of the model, but if we don't understand the first principle and like how we typically learn throughout the history, when we go to university, I know most people would tend to study the past papers and that will be it. But then understanding the first principle becomes important. It becomes a foundation for us to then interpret the outputs of the AI. And so going forward, when organizations do hire junior members, I highly doubt, and I don't want to see this happening as well, is that they only hire like one graduates and not consider the business continuity of the organization. There needs to be someone that can ultimately take the throne for the next generation for that organization.
I think that's a really important question, and there's a lot of sides to it. But, you know, if I think about how I went through my junior roles and I struggled through mechanical processes, and did I really learn? I think I learned like very marginally. Like you spend weeks, months on calculations that are really mechanical, arithmetic. And then you think at the end of the day, did I learn something? Well, I learned a process. And it was only after debriefing with my senior members that I understood what exactly that was doing. And it seemed quite disconnected to the mechanical process. And so in the future world, you know, you're not going to have a team of 20, 50 junior people doing mechanical processes. It'll probably be a team of one junior person with AI doing the work of 50 people. But you'll still have that senior member that can explain to that junior person, probably better because it's one-on-one. So in that way, I think mentoring is crucial, and it becomes our responsibility to train the junior people who will be doing the workload of what we used to do, or 50 of us used to do.
I think that's about the time. And thank you again for our brilliant speakers. And thank you for all your time and energy and questions. So please enjoy the afternoon tea.